Welcome to the Leah Ideology Podcast. I'm your host, Leah Wagner. I'm so glad you're here. Hi, guys.
Hi, friend.
I'm really glad that you're here because this is a surprise episode. Surprise for you and a surprise for me. I had some messages in my DMs on social media to maybe consider sharing my story of being an Asian American, being a Korean American woman. And it never occurred to me to do that. Some of you probably don't even know that I'm Korean. You might look at me and think I'm a tall Italian woman. I'm not. I am for sure Korean. But they asked me to share my story, and it never really crossed my mind. And then when I'm watching this stuff throughout the month of May of all these Asian, you know, cuisines and these Asian entrepreneurs, and I was like, I could at least share my story. I mean, like that's literally the bare minimum I could do. So this is that. I have no notes in front of me. I'm going to do this in one take. I haven't been editing my episodes anyway, but I just kind of want to snuggle in and talk to you about it. I'm 40 years old. I'm going to be 40 this October 2023. So this story begins. Guys, can we all cuddle in? Can we all get in here? Just kind of like kumbaya together. Okay, so this story starts back in 1983, and I was born in Seoul, South Korea. Like, I'm Korean, y'all. I'm not just like, I was born there. I took a 23andMe test, and they were like, you were 100% Korean. Like, why did you even take this test? So I was born in Korea, and you have to consider the time that I was born, which was the early 80s, right? And there was some wild stuff going on in the world, as there always is. But the Korean culture at that time was pretty strict when it came to babies, when it came to having a child out of wedlock, when it came to having a child with a mental or a physical disability, those kinds of things, right? Those might not be things that we can grasp today in 2023 America. But in 1983, South Korea, babies were being abandoned at a startling rate. And if you are curious about that, I would really recommend that you watch the documentary, The Drop Box. It's one of the most powerful things I have ever seen in my life, obviously because of my personal connection to it. I was not put in a drop box. I was abandoned and taken to an orphanage, not through a drop box. But there's a lot of good and powerful and emotional discussion in that documentary about the abandonment of babies and the hopeful adopted babies, right? The hopeful adoption for the babies. So that's where my story began. I was found in 1983, outside abandoned, and I was taken to an orphanage. And I was there for several months. To give you a time frame here, I was already in the United States by 6 months old. So everything, all of this that took place was within the first 6 months of my life, right? Which you would think, and I went my whole life thinking that that was like no big deal, right? That was like, I was a baby. Like, what does that even matter? But now that I'm like older and really much more self-reflective and trying to do some self-work, I realize maybe how critical it was that I wasn't shown, a whole lot of stability at that time just due to, my environment. So it's interesting. It's interesting to deep dive with my therapist, but that's not you guys. So let's move on. So at the same time, all of this was going on with me in South Korea, my adopted parents, were unsuccessfully trying to have kids, right? And they had friends who were also going through the adoption process, and they decided to go with Asian Korean adoption with a company called, or an agency called, Love the Children out of Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And the reason they did this was because their friend, you know, it was, they didn't have to travel to South Korea. They got the children were flown to the United States with the adoption agency, and we were delivered in relatively short time. I don't know if we went UPS or FedEx, but we came pretty quick over here. So, it really was a match made in heaven. I think I can't, oh my gosh, I really can't say enough about how freaking lucky I got with the life that I get to live, starting with my parents and my family and the life that they provided for me, right? When I think about that, and when I really think about what that is and how miraculous it is, it gets to me, right? It's really a powerful thing. So I came over, I like to say that I'm fresh off the boat in March, but I was adopted. Like I officially met my adopted parents on March 21st, 1984. It would have been, right? Because it would have just, yes, 1984. And my mom will tell you the story. She tells it every March 21st, right? She's always like, listen, this is what happened. She does not have that accent whatsoever. I don't know where that came from, but she always tells the story of, there was a snowstorm and they were flying up to New York. I came in through JFK into the United States, and that's where they needed to go to claim me. We were both flying above the airport because the weather was so treacherous. It was very snowy. There was a huge snowstorm that came in, and my mom obviously was like, they're going to send her back. Like, what if we're not there to take her? We're going to send her back to Korea. But of course my plane was up there doing the same thing. And my dad, we did an interview when I was in like fifth grade for a news special. And when I rewatched it to kind of do this episode, my dad said, yeah, it was just, it was pretty cool. There were these Asian women, and they came off the plane and they yelled her name, Wugayung, Wugayung. And I knew that we'll take her. That's ours. This woman came over and handed them a baby. And that's how they became parents. So it's really a sweet story. I remember when I was pregnant with Isaac, we were sitting around the table and we were talking about the plan, you know, when I go into labor, who's going to come and who's going to call who. And my dad was like, I don't know. This is all so foreign to me. I just go to an airport and I get a baby. Just hand me a baby when I go to an airport. So March 21st, I came to the United States. I had to be in the United States for 6 months before I could officially become a United States citizen and officially become part of my parents' family. And of course, anybody who has gone through that adoption process, that 6 months is very nerve-wracking. Any phone call or any letter that came, correspondence came to the house, you know, there was this little twinge of nervousness that they might have to bring me back, right? That happens. So in our case, that did not happen. I went to the courthouse. I became a citizen. And everything was coming up roses from there. I had a beautiful childhood. I was very provided for, and there was never a lack of love or laughter, none of that. However, I did grow up in small town USA. I'm talking like, hi, my name is Leah. I'm the only diversity here. Like, me and my brother. We're Asian, and we're here to diversify this town, basically. There were no other people of color. It was just us. And there was Kim and Mike, and they were Asian and African American, and that was it. There was the four of us. So yeah, I mean, we dealt with our fair share of adversity. I can remember the first time that it happened to me. I was in preschool, and I think the only reason I remember it is because it was a big deal, right? At my preschool, there was a hallway where you could ride like big wheels, you know, like tricycles and stuff. And I wanted to go in there. It's like, I want to go, like, who wouldn't, right? Or freaking big wheels. And I remember this girl came over to me and she was like, can you please hold out your arm? I was like, yeah, girl. And so I hold out my arm and she goes, do you see how your skin is darker? Like, it's darker than mine. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, that means you can't come in here. And I was like, okay, bye. Like, I'm in preschool. I didn't know it. I was like, okay, bye. Well, I went home and I said, you know, mom's like, what'd you do at school today? And I must have said something about the bikes, and I must have said something about what this girl said to me. And it was brought up and it was discussed. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, my skin is a different color than everybody else's. It's literally much darker than everybody else's. Huh. That's wild. My parents never hid from me that I'm adopted. It's not like that was ever, it was always discussed and it was always celebrated and it was never a secret. It was always very openly talked about. But this was the first time, I guess, I noticed that my skin was different than everybody else's. I had my fair share of being picked on growing up. My brother had his fair share. I don't want to talk too much about his experience because it's not my experience, but for me, I went to humor, which I know is shocking to you guys, but I went to quick-witted humor. If I can get people to laugh, or if I can address the elephant in the room, meaning my Asianness, if I can talk about it first, then I can't get made fun of by them, right? Or if I can make everybody laugh, then maybe they won't even see that I'm Asian, right? It won't even be like an issue. So that was my defense mechanism, and that's what I did, not even knowing it. It was just like what I did to calm my mind, right? And my brother was very different than that. My brother was much more introverted, and so much of the time I was protecting him, and I wanted to protect him, and I never wanted anybody to hurt his feelings or make him feel less than, right? So I think because of the way that I coped with that, with humor, like a quick-witted sarcasm, that's where that came from, because I there were kids that made fun of me. You know what I mean? Of course there were. I remember in art class, there was a kid who took like a roller for paint and he like rolled it up and down his face. And he said, if I do this enough, you know, my face will look like Leah's. There was always that. When I had to get glasses as a kid, there weren't any that fit me because there's no bridge in my nose. My head is gigantic. Like Koreans, we are known for our gigantic skulls. We have huge, like, I don't know why. It's like written somewhere, but we do. So it was like trying to fit a pair of glasses on a basketball, okay, or like a watermelon. You can't. It's not possible. So even to this day, I still struggle with finding glasses and things that fit my face because it's so differently shaped than what is available to purchase where I am in small town USA, right? And I wasn't really near any big metropolitan cities. I think Pittsburgh was the closest to us, and it was about an hour and a half to 2 hours away. And my parents didn't really go into the city. Right. Like they weren't city dwellers. They were country mice. So I think that in order to kind of also cope with that and try to, I don't know if it was to distract from my Asianness, but it was certainly to I certainly wanted people to like me. And so I made huge efforts to be perfect at everything. If I was perfect, you wouldn't even notice that I am Asian, right? Like you wouldn't even, it wouldn't even be a big deal. So that was a big one too. I needed to succeed. I needed to succeed in school. I needed to succeed with most things. I had to. My parents had very high expectations of me. I therefore had very high expectations of myself. And that's really what I remember from my childhood. In regards to us being, in regards to the Asianness, right? In regards to being Korean. It wasn't really until my teen years when I started to want to wear makeup, want to kind of enter the beauty world as teenage girls do, that I realized there's nothing out there that I know how to do. my eyelids were different than everybody else's. My eyelashes were different than everybody else's. I had no idea how to put on makeup, and no one could help me put on makeup because there were no Asians like anywhere, nowhere. So I started to really kind of get into people who were doing direct selling. Right. And I mean, this was in my 20s. Now I'm talking in my 20s. In my teens, I just gave into I'll wear a bunch of foundation because that doesn't have anything to do with my my Koreanness. I'll wear a lot of mascara, even though it ran down my face because of the shape of my lower lids. And I just didn't do anything else. It was always foundation and mascara, foundation and eyeliner, something like that. When I was in my 20s, I started to talk to direct sellers like, hi, you sell makeup. I've never been good at being a girly girl. I need you to help me with that. Please help me get mascara and makeup that I can put on my Asian face that will stay and will look good. And it stumped them every time. No joke. It stumped them every time. They were like, let me reach out to my friend Jenny. She might know Karen, who I think knows an Asian girl through her third cousin's boyfriend. Let me get in touch with you about that. It was never like let me show you. Let me help you put makeup on, right? It wasn't that. And every time we put makeup on, I somehow ended up looking like a clown, like Mimi from Drew Carey. It did not sit well on my face. In addition to that, my hair was always an issue. And not to the degree of, you know, women of color who have that beautiful curly hair. I didn't know how to style it. Nothing that I was shown, none of the hairstyles that I was trying to do as a teenager or in my 20s, it wasn't working on my hair, and I had no idea why. So I think that my being Asian really kind of shaped who I was without me even knowing it. Like I said, I think a lot of this is a lot of self-reflection and a lot of my own healing and looking back, you know, and trying to connect all the dots. But I think even what's funny is even in my own mind, even in my own, the conversations within my own head, I forget that I'm Asian all the time. Like I'll look at a family picture and be like, oh my God, oh no, that's me. That's me. I was like, who's that person in with my family? It's me. It's me, you guys. I remember a time I went to an audition with one of my friends she played the flute with me. And we were in the same symphony and the same circles. And she asked if I would go to this audition with her. And I was like, absolutely. So we go and we're walking down this hallway to where her audition was. And we saw this girl, this Asian girl carrying a flute. And I was like, oh, my gosh. She looks so cute doing that. Like, she looks so cute. And I don't know why. I just thought, like, I don't know, maybe she should be playing a piano or a violin or something, right? And then I'm like, oh, my God, that's me. That's what I look like. I was very unaware growing up because everything that I looked at was unlike me. And so I thought that things didn't apply to me, right? Like someone said that, you know, well, I came from my mommy's belly. Well, I didn't. I didn't. Well, my parents had to have sex to have to have a baby. And I'm like, mine didn't. You know, and then I started thinking, how did I get here? You know what I mean? What does adoption really mean? So those kinds of things went through my mind, and they were always discussed within my family. I don't want to give the impression at all that my parents didn't have an open dialogue about how our family was structured, because we did. And it was always very celebrated, and they were always very proud of their kids. So that's a non-issue. I would say, that COVID changed things. I would say, I was naive to thinking how much COVID changed things for Asian people. I kind of lived in the same area my whole life, right? So aside of being like the only Korean woman within 3,000 miles, I played the flute pretty publicly. So people knew me in town. They knew me from my different performances and different speaking events, and they know who I am. So after so much time, I'm not getting picked on anymore, right? Not within my own little hometown, not in my little safe space. But then COVID happened, and that changed everything, because people can't tell the difference, myself included. And I know this is going to sound like a joke, but it's not. No one can tell the difference between Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, Korean, you know. So it was just Asian people. Asian people were to blame for COVID. And you guys, I don't know if you've been listening, but I'm Asian. So I definitely felt a shift during and after the pandemic. When I go into places, there's a little bit more looks. There's a kind of, you know, there's more glares. I would say though that the hardest part of it is, I have a kid. Right? Like, and he's like a kid. He was like 7, 8. He's 9 now. He's learning right now how to deal with the world. And like, the world is not showing up for him in a good way. You know, like the world is not holding up their end of the deal. So I have to hold up my end of the deal as his mom. And it's hard to not be like, well, this guy said this, and so he's the bad guy. Or he said this derogatory term, so he's the bad guy. And she shouldn't say this, and they shouldn't do this. And I don't want to foster this anger in him. I refuse to foster anger in him. I'm trying very hard not to, is what I should say. I don't succeed all the time. Hardly ever, really. But I'm trying. So how I talk about this and how I approach this with him and talk about these hard issues that these kids are growing up with. I try to do it in a way where that A, makes sense to him, is age appropriate, you know, all of those things. But also, to add some realism to this, is kind of the way of the world. And here, right here in the four walls of this home, you are loved and you are safe and you are, you know, protected. Out in the world out there, I can't make those promises. Your decisions will have consequences. Your actions will make people feel one way or another. The way you look, the way you talk, out there, it's wild out there, dude. You know, I don't want to create a space inside my home where we're not having those kinds of conversations. So I also want to be able to control the dialogue. That's what I'm trying to say. I want to be able to control the dialogue and how the conversation goes with my kid. So when this thing that I'm about to talk about, when this incident took place, it was really hard because my kid was with me. I have never experienced blatant racism as an adult. I usually can diffuse it with humor or, kindness, like overly friendly. I do tend to go into that route too. But this was like blatant racism. It was physical. It was an assault. And someone threw their food in my face, like their fast food bag in my face. And thankfully, my kid was in the car and I was walking to the car. Like, I went to go throw my stuff away. And this guy drove by in his truck and he just threw his food in my face and said, go back to take your China virus back to China with you. And they drove off. It was so fast. It happened so fast. All of their stuff went over me, right? Like cheese, pickles, onions, like all of their stuff. And my kid didn't see it because he was in the car and not facing me where it happened. But it happened. And it rattled me. I'm still rattled. Oh my gosh. I wasn't expecting to cry during that. But this is where I grew up. These are my people. And I think that's why it was so scary, was because this is now infiltrating my safe space, right? So as I usually do, I kind of share my thoughts better when I write them out. So I did do a Facebook post. I wrote out a response to these guys, this incident that happened. And I want to share it with you here because I think it's fun. And I like sharing my writing with you. I really do. And also, this was my response to them, I guess. This was the way I could respond to them since I didn't know how else to do it. And since it's in writing, this will be the response that my son sees. You know, this is going to be how he sees his mom respond to a situation like this. So I want to read you the Facebook post that I wrote about it. Okay, let me get this. James is out there making lunch and he's making me giggle. Okay, I had to get this pulled up on my Facebook because I thought that I had printed it out, but I didn't. So this happened August 25th, back in 2021. And I wrote this. This evening, as I was taking my son out for a milkshake, I walked across the parking lot to throw away our garbage. As I was returning to my car, a truck pulled up near me, put down their windows, and whipped out their garbage at me while yelling, "Take your China virus back to China with you, China girl." Their drinks missed me, thank God. But the rest of their garbage hit me square in the face. Ketchup, onions, pickles, fries, ranch packets. I was able to get back to my car and wipe my face off without my son noticing. And it all happened in a matter of seconds. All I heard was laughter as they drove away. And all I want to do right now is to calm down, but I can't seem to. So I'll write. I'm grateful that Isaac didn't see or hear anything. And I'm grateful that I wasn't hurt. I do want to say, though, before I attempt to get some sleep, to the garbage-throwing boys who cackled as they drove away from me. Number one, if you didn't want the onions and pickles on your sandwich, all you had to do was tell them at the window, and they would have held the onions and pickles. They do that any time. Ask them next time. It's a super easy request, and it's much better than wasting food. Number two, most laughter is joyful and contagious, but yours sounded like you were overcompensating for being lost and lonely. I hope you find whatever you need to heal. Otherwise, I do believe you are in for a very lonely life, and I don't wish that on anyone. Number three, If you had even bothered to take the time to check out the circumference of my head, you would have known right away that I'm Korean and not a China girl. Koreans are known for their gigantic skulls. You didn't know that? Oh, well, sorry to make you look like a dumbass. Hurt people hurt people. They are the ones who need love and compassion the most. And normally, I'm pretty good at extending that love and grace, but for now, I just need to cry. Everything feels heavy. Our world right now, I mean, we can do better than this, can't we? Can't we? Life is hard enough as it is. Why do we feel that hating each other is a route that we even should have to take? So that's the post that I wrote. I felt good about it. It was healing. Writing for me is very healing. And I felt there was a lot of support, obviously, that came in from that. But I would say that with things getting trickier with COVID and the role that the continent of Asia apparently played in the whole pandemic, things are a little bit more sticky, I feel the need to be a little bit more self-aware. So for me personally, and I need to say this because it's important, I would have been one of those people who wouldn't think that the AAPI movement affected me. I really totally thought that I am healed. I am good with my Asianness. I am Korean and American and proud and all. I'm totally fine with my adoption and my history and my upbringing. You know, I'm good with all that. And if that were true, I probably wouldn't have had such an emotional reaction when my boyfriend and I were watching CBS Mornings and they were highlighting an Asian woman who like went all in on her dreams, right? This Asian cuisine. And it was so captivating to me to watch this woman who looked like me going after her dream. And here's what I was looking at. Oh my God, her eye makeup is so pretty. Her hair is so pretty. How did she get her hair to curl? Oh my God, she's wearing mascara that's not running down her face. She looks like me and she's doing it. She's wearing glasses. How do I get glasses? How do I be her? How do I talk to the people that are around her so that I can learn how to be who I am? So I can learn how to be Korean. That's what I felt like. And there was a huge overwhelm. Also, there was a huge feeling of overwhelm in regards to this woman is doing what she wants to do with her life. She was born, I believe it was the Philippines. And now she's doing it. She's living this gigantic dream. And it was very motivational for me and very inspiring for me. And I had a very visceral reaction. I just bawled. I remember crying. I sat there and cried watching this woman. And it was a myriad of emotions. It wasn't like sadness or happiness, or it wasn't just one thing. It was a bunch of emotions. And I just stared at the TV watching this woman. And that was a huge moment for me. And from that point, I realized, yes, I am for AAPI month. Because growing up, my mom tried to give us some Asian heritage and Asian influence. And she did the best she could with what she had and what was available, right? I only had one book growing up about what it was like to be Asian, and it was called Chinese Eyes. I remember it was an orange book. It had the picture of a little Asian girl on the front, and it didn't look like an Asian girl. That was always another thing. No one can ever draw Asian features correctly. So I think that I know, because I am one of those people sometimes, like, oh my gosh, there's another awareness thing. I can't keep track of all of them. And when the AAPI one came out, I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I don't know how I feel about this. I am one. You know, I was like kind of on the fence about all of it. And I didn't really speak up about it because I didn't have any firm opinions about it. But then when I saw this woman on TV doing the damn thing, right? And I had such a strong reaction to it. I realized, yes, I am all of a sudden very, very, very staunchly in favor for representation and how much it matters. I don't know how it would have changed me. I don't know how it would have affected me. It's not worth going back and thinking about that. But I know there's still little Asian girls growing up today who maybe want to wear makeup someday or maybe want to do curl their hair and they don't know how to. I am not the Asian woman who can teach them that because I don't know how to do those things. But hopefully they don't grow up. Or I hope they do grow up with more resources and more support than we did in the 90s, like in the 80s and the 90s. So, and I think we're moving in that direction. I think that's all happening, and things like AAPI month will help with that to see someone who is like you doing amazing things. It was inspirational. It was inspirational in a way that I wasn't expecting it to be. It was like inspiration completely out of left field, right? Like I wasn't seeking it. I wasn't, and it just happened. So I don't know. I think that, gosh, I think today I still use humor and sarcasm to kind of deflect a lot of maybe more real emotions. I'm trying to work through a lot of that and realize, you know, now you have a kid and you have to own some of your shit and you have to, you know, kind of change how you do things and how you speak about things and, you know, be a mom, be a good mom, right? To your kid, who is also half Asian, right? His dad is Caucasian. I am Asian. So he is a biracial kid. Unless I date an Asian dude, any relationship I'm in is a biracial relationship. So, I mean, those are just interesting things to think about and interesting labels, I guess. But I'm really glad that you guys asked to talk about this episode. I wouldn't say that I'm like super proud. I don't have like, I'm not like flying like a Korean flag. You know, I don't know. I am Korean and I'm okay with it. I'm comfortable with it. I feel like anybody who would come for me in a, you know, verbal making fun of kind of way, I can handle myself. I've been doing it my whole life. But it wasn't until COVID that things got physical. And it wasn't until COVID where I really, it wasn't just making fun of, it was a deep hatred. It was an attack. It was an attack based off of hatred. That's what I feel like. And I don't know. I think that, I mean, I know that life is so hard. It's hard across the board right now, right? And there was that one quote for Bacharach, right? He was like, what the world needs now is love, sweet love, right? It's the only thing we have too little of. And I think that that's true. I guess I just encourage you, if you were looking for my input and what my two cents is, I guess as I raise Isaac and as I throw him out into the world more and more, right, as we have to do as parents, there is so much out there that I don't understand and there's so much out there that I have yet to experience that I can't possibly teach him and coach him for every situation that's going to come his way, right? What I can do, though, and what I do have a good grasp on is what people think is weird. Right? Or bad. For example, people who look different than us are weird. I'm not saying this is fact. I'm saying this as you know, generalizations and you know, to kind of help prove my point. People who smoke are normally considered bad, right? It's bad. Those kinds of things. So when my son sees a smoker out in the wild, like out in real life, I know that the first thing that he sees is the cigarette because that's the bad behavior. But, and this is the important part, we have to be able to differentiate a bad behavior from a bad person. Whether someone smokes or not does not make them a good or bad person. Whether someone has brown skin or Asian skin, it doesn't make them a bad person. It makes them different. And I think that when we see something that is different or bad, it's important as, I don't know, for our own mental health and, you know, certainly for the health of our kids, that we point out something that is good about that person. So if I see someone smoking, oh my God, I love her shoes. Isn't she so cute? Oh my gosh, she looks so professional. She looks so, you know, some compliment to point out that the smoking does not define that person. Same with people of color. Same with Asian people. When we see these things, you know, so me as an Asian woman, if I make you uncomfortable, then maybe point out something to me, to your child, that isn't about my Asianness. You know, oh, she has a really loud, funny laugh, doesn't she? Or, oh my gosh, did you just see her fall over absolutely nothing? She trips over air. Like, you know, when you point out things that don't have to do with the thing that is blaring in your face that you want to make fun of, or you want to judge, or you want to criticize, then we're teaching our kids to look deeper, and we're teaching our kids to change their perspective, to look at people in a different way and not always at the negative, which, you guys, we are the ones usually imparting on them as adults. Right? I didn't know I had brown skin and my skin was so much darker until the adults brought it to my attention because the girl said it to me. She said it to me, but then she learned that from her parents, right? No 3 or 4 year old girl is just going to come in and talk to someone like that, you know? So they're getting it from us. They're getting it from us. And I know that's not new news to you, but that's my piece of advice, is when you see something out there, someone behaving in a way that you think is bad or, you know, is different, try to take the time to find something that's good and beautiful and unique to that person and mention it to your kid, or tell yourself. The inner dialogue that we have with ourselves is so immensely important. Tell yourself, because then if you create that pattern later on, maybe you won't see that I'm Asian. Maybe you will see that I am a good writer or a good speaker. I am a good friend. I try to be a good friend. I try to be a good mom. I try to be a good girlfriend. Those are things that have absolutely nothing to do with the color of my skin or my heritage or my nationality. Nothing. That has nothing to do with those things. So I think we have to make a more concerted effort, a bigger effort to focus on that. Focus on the good things. Intentionally seek out those things and mention them. Tell someone, even if it's just yourself. Because then when we do that and we create that habit, that's when the perspective starts to shift. That's when we start to see a shift in that thinking. And I think that that's important. Oh my God, what an episode, right? Oh my God, what an episode. I'm glad you guys requested it. I'm glad you guys asked for me to speak about it. I almost didn't do it. Guys, it's May 26th. That's when I'm recording this. In pure Leah fashion, I have waited till the absolute very last minute to do this. I thought about doing this like in April. Someone messaged me about it like at the beginning of May. I had plenty of time to get this done. It's May 26th. I'm just hoping to get it out by May 31st during AAPI month. And this should come as no shock. I'm the mom. Like, Christmas sneaks up on me every year, every single year. Every year I'm shocked that I have to get gifts, dress my kid in red and green, and send cookies to school. Like, it's shocking to me every year. So, basically, I love that you are here with me. I love that you spend time with me here. I am grateful for you trusting me to spend time with me and to share the same space. And to listen to what we have to talk about here, because I think it's fun and it's special and it's important, and it wouldn't be that way if you weren't here. So thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. I hope that you are following me on Instagram. If you're not, come hang out with me on Instagram. I'm trying very hard to post on my stories every day. I'm trying really hard. I'm not posting so much on TikTok. I'm trying. But Instagram is really where I'm trying to put the focus, because that's where I'm going to do the blanket drops. I was just talking about that in the last episode. So you can go check that out. Or in episode number 16, I talked a lot about it. And check me out on Instagram. The first blanket drop is going to happen in June, and I definitely want you to participate and grab a blanket that's for sale if you would like one. So definitely do that. We have more new episodes coming up in the coming weeks, which is really awesome. More interviews with more amazing people. Thank you for being here, and thank you for always encouraging me to continue to do this. You have no idea how impactful that is and how much it motivates me to keep going. So I appreciate you, and I will talk to you guys soon.